Thank you, David. The nice thing about batting cleanup is that all the variables that we've talked about have been explained, and I can go right to the punch. Although this title is Factors Promoting Health and Preventive Health Behaviors Among Older Chinese Americans, this really is a therapeutic session for me. This was a sub-analysis that I did with my dissertation. As I am developing manuscripts, I've had to revisit the analyses and feelings that were involved during the process. So thank you for being a part of this therapeutic session for me. I do not have any financial relationships or commercial interests related to this study, although I'm not going to say. So background, efforts to reduce health disparities among Chinese Americans, Chinese American elderly in the U.S. are significantly hampered by the lack of disaggregated epidemiological and behavioral data. A more sophisticated understanding of culture is required to move towards addressing health disparities in older ages. And now, I loosely use the term older adult. These are Chinese Americans 50 years and older. And the older I get, the more inappropriate the definition of 50 years old becomes. So research with immigrant populations needs to be better at addressing cultural influences on health behavior and healthcare use. Within group variation must be accounted for before generalizations are made concerning the beliefs, values, and practices of population groups. This study applied the Anderson model of healthcare utilization to analyze the relevance of different measures of acculturation and identify consistent patterns of predisposing, enabling, and need factors, those things that you've already been exposed to earlier, that predict preventive health activities, self-reported health for older Chinese Americans. And I do have to admit that even though this is looking at Chinese Americans, I don't think that the heterogeneity within a subgroup is unique to Asian Americans. It was a very good model. I mean, Chinese Americans in California span up to 5 generations. So you have that ability to look at the differences between older adults within a subgroup. That being said, since the California Health Interview Survey provides several ways to operationalize acculturation, different proxy measures for acculturation were explored to see if different acculturation measures were more relevant to different types of preventive health activities and health outcomes versus others. So some of the criticisms around acculturation metrics and Asian American populations or Pacific Islander populations as well is that they are developed using usually younger populations, college student populations, and or it's used with an aggregate group of Asian Americans, or even worse, Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. So some of the variables that I employed were years lived in the U.S., percent life in the U.S., English language ability, and whether or not the interview was conducted in Mandarin or Chinese. So I see there are some really nice distributions here, fun numbers to play with. Model. All right, we'll go into more of that later. But so I think the two unique qualities that I enjoy of Chiz, and Chiz and I have a very intimate relationship. We spent lots of odd hours together. In fact, my wife said that this is actually my first wife. but in working with numerically small populations, the thing that's nice about Chiz is you can combine years because of the continuity of questions and the like. So I used the 2003 and 2005 data combined, which produced an analytical sample of about a little over 1,000 Chinese Americans, 50 years and over. So again, it's difficult to do subgroup analyses. And then when you have to cut it up by age and or sex, it becomes even that much more difficult. So some of the outcome variables that I looked at were self-reported general health, walking for transportation or exercise, having a flu shot in the past year, ever having some sort of colorectal cancer screening, ever ever, oh, actually, having a current mammogram and doctor visits in the past year. Some of the predictor variables, in addition to acculturation, include age, gender, education. And as you can see here, and as Steve mentioned earlier, our Asian older adults are kind of a young old. And an interesting distribution in education as well. We've got about 50% who have up to a high school education, and then you've got this group of people who have a college degree or an advanced degree. Some of the enabling variables, I think, that are interesting to look at is that a lot of these folks are insured. Almost 90% of this sample are insured. 91% report they have a usual source of care. So I think it becomes interesting in analyses that when you incorporate these covariates in the model, that something like acculturation still is salient. Need variables. So again, chronic conditions or things that would send you into using healthcare use. All right, so here's a nice summary of the findings. Not as beautifully aesthetically put together as Steve's, but I think they'll do for now. But they do kind of summarize the different outcome measures and some of the, in the saturated models or the full models, the significant contributing variables controlling for the other covariates. And you see that among, for walking, flu shots, mammo, colorectal cancer screening, doctor visits, and self-assessed health, the acculturation variable was salient for walking and for colorectal cancer screenings and self-assessed health. And I don't want to say that, I don't want to mislead you in saying that acculturation is not a factor for something like, let's say, flu shots or mammograms. It just, we may not be measuring it. That's appropriate for those particular outcome measures. Again, and also thinking about mammograms, you're also cutting the sample size in half, looking at women 50 years and over. Okay, so the nitty-gritty. For walking, you know, when applying the four different measures of acculturation, years in the U.S., proportion of life spent in the U.S., English language ability or fluency, and what if the interview was conducted in Mandarin or Cantonese, the only variable at a focal relationship level that stood out was English language fluency. And in the full model, the English language fluency and having ever being diagnosed with some form of cancer, you're much less likely to walk for transport or exercise. Looking at colorectal cancer screening, actually all four measures of acculturation were significant at the bivariate level. So what I did was in the full model, I ran a goodness of fit test. I had a difficult time finding some sort of theoretical explanation for it. So what I did was I punted. And I let the software do the hard work for me. But for colorectal cancer screening, the best fit seemed to be percent of life in the U.S. You also find, and it's not surprising that with increased years, you're more likely to have a colorectal cancer screening. If you're a U.S. citizen, you're more likely. If you have a usual source of care, and if you have more doctor visits, you're more likely. More encounters with your provider. Okay, so self-reported health. Of the four acculturation variables, three out of the four, so minus what language the interview was conducted in, all other three acculturation variables were significant at the focal relationship level. Again, in putting it into a saturated model, I then punted, applying a goodness of fit test, and statistically speaking, the percent of life in U.S. seemed to be the best fit for this model. But you'll find that the higher the education level, you're more likely to report excellent or very good health. With increased proportion of life spent in the U.S., you're more likely to report very good or excellent health. If you have a chronic condition, you're much less likely to report very good or excellent health. So it makes sense. I think that there are several implications, and I just list two, but I think the important thing I want to note is that because I did punt in finding out what sort of acculturation variable seemed to be the best fit, we do need studies to kind of better understand the underlying mechanisms. What exactly is it about these acculturation metrics that are applicable not only with this population group, but for these outcome measures? But I also want to highlight the fact that it is important to collect and disaggregate ethnic-specific data, in this case, Asian Americans. In another paper, and perhaps next year, I'll be talking about comparisons between different groups. And what we did find, I'll give you a little teaser, is that some of the acculturation measures were different between Asian American groups and the outcome measures. So this is a unique population, and I hope that this has enticed you to look at data differently. And thank you for being a part of my therapeutic session.
Great, thank you, Alec. And everyone stayed right on time, so we do have some time for questions. Yes, sir, go ahead.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I just want to quickly say something about Steve Bonham. Why the ER issue was hot. I think it's because, people see the life and death thing having access to emergency care. And, I mean, I'm coming out as a politician, and I've used the ER issue the other way, pushed progressively for more funding. And I found the public is very responsive on that issue. Because I think they connect with life and death sort of matter. But what I wanted to talk about was the prevention measures. I just was here 2 weeks ago and I heard a long presentation on mammography guidelines and the age 40 business, just so you know. Because we heard from the guy who wrote the report that got slammed all across the country. He did explain to us that of all the major studies done on a correlation between mammography between the ages of 40 and 50 and bad outcomes, there are none of the major studies that found a statistically significant difference, whether you get a mammography or not, between the ages of 40 and 50 related to breast cancer, morbidity, and mortality. So just so you know, that's another variable now in the last couple of years. And then my question is, I didn't follow this part. I mean, I get the argument that prevention will save money down the road. So if we get folks with mammographies, the colon scan, screens, and so forth, that'll save money down the road. My question is who reaps the savings? Is it necessarily the medical care system in the United States or back in Mexico? Because, like the binational conferences, I've seen Steve, the model is always we give you primary care in the United States, and if you're really sick, you go back to Mexico. So I don't know if this applies in this case as well, if you have any information on who reaps the benefits of the savings.
Well, who reaps the benefits? I guess if you're assuming that everybody, the undocumented population are able to or will run back to Mexico, to get their care, then you could argue that maybe we don't reap all of the benefits of providing primary care. But I guess Steve has done research on the trips to Mexico for health care, so you might have some perspective on that. But I think that ultimately we are talking about the U.S. health. It's not just, let me put it a little bit differently. The trips to the emergency room that people get accused of, you're running to the emergency room, particularly when it's not necessary. So you're going to the emergency room to get your prescription refilled, you're going to the emergency room because you have a toothache or because you have
sore throat,
these are all indicators of not being able to go to the primary care provider. So you could actually, by providing primary care provided services, by providing